Our next case is 13-0021, Teresa Hayward versus Summa Health System, Akron City Hospital. Mr. Leek for the appellant.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I am Doug Leek, and I'm here on behalf of the defendants' appellants, Dr. Collada, Dr. Wainick, and Summa Health Systems. And on behalf of the defendants, we ask that you reverse the erroneous decision from the Ninth District that vacated a legally and factually sound jury verdict. In reversing and vacating a jury verdict, the Ninth District inconceivably found prejudicial error as a result of a remote cause jury instruction, which is proximate cause, where the jury found no negligence. In vacating the jury verdict, the Ninth District misapplied the law with respect to prejudicial error, where there was no negligence, and the issue of proximate cause was immaterial and harmless error on that proximate cause jury instruction.
Because there was a finding of no negligence, you say the jury didn't even have to get to the proximate cause.
Exactly. And what I would like to do is jump to paragraph 17 of the Ninth District's decision, where it based its finding of prejudice on a speculative conclusion that the jury was confused. At paragraph 17, the Ninth District stated that when the jury considered causation, it could have been confused when it considered the breach of the standard of care and remote causation.
And is that because everybody that testified agreed that this injury is caused by the placement of the device in the body of the patient?
Correct.
Everybody
yes.
agrees with that. This was a ring or a device that opened the abdomen for surgery.
Yes.
And it was the placement of that device that caused the nerve damage to the leg.
It's a Bookwalter retractor, and after the injury occurred, they had a neurologist review this, and the conclusion was that the retractor caused it. But that, in and of itself, does not mean that there was negligence.
Well, isn't the only way that the retractor could have caused the negligence would be if it was wrongly positioned? In other words, there wasn't enough room between the muscle and the bottom of the blade, is how it's referred to in the briefs, and that should have been monitored to make sure that there was enough room so that the blade wasn't pressing on a muscle that would have affected the nerve.
The key to this case is that particular nerve injury is a known risk as set forth in the consent form. And what
caused
the standard
by what?
Pardon me?
Caused by what? Known risk.
Right. Nerve injury is a known risk in all surgeries.
Exactly. That's what
Correct.
I mean. Nerves. But here there is an agreement that this device was responsible, the positioning of this device was responsible for the nerve injury.
Correct. But then the issue is whether or not they established their burden of proof to say that it was negligently placed. And what we had was the testimony of Dr. Collada.
And then there's testimony that says that if it is correctly placed, you will never have this nerve injury. Is that correct?
Disputing testimony on that. And that is why the jury rejected the testimony of their expert, Dr. Irvin, because he said that if it's placed, it will eliminate the risk altogether.
And you had an expert that said even if it is correctly placed, in other words, there's room between the blade and the muscle, even if it's correctly placed, you could have this nerve leg injury.
There is a constellation of events, according to our expert, Dr. Muscalera, that there's a constellation of events during surgery that then can cause that injury, even after the doctor has done everything properly to place that. Now, what is at issue here is that not particularly
What would that constellation be? As I recall from the briefs, that was the testimony, but what this constellation consists of was not really defined.
There were other things that were eliminated, hematoma, abscess, those were eliminated. But the key is that the issue in this case is that even if every step is taken by the physician, just like Dr. Collada testified, that everything he did, he carefully placed it, there can still be that risk of injury. It is not 0%. And the jury rejected that.
Well, didn't you also argue in your brief that the waiver that you sign means you accept nerve damage as a course of surgery?
That was never our position, that you accept that injury in terms of accepting negligence, as the plaintiffs have argued. We used the consent form. First of all, they opened the door and used the consent form first. We used the consent form after they did to demonstrate the risk of surgery, bleeding, infection, nerve injury, that it's a known risk and cannot be eliminated completely. And the jury rejected the testimony of their expert that said that it would be a 0% risk.
So that's what my problem is with this case. I'm trying to understand it. I'm glad you're here today. The Ninth District Court of Appeals says, and because there is evidence that the instructions did confuse the jury. What evidence?
Let me go back to the point of this case and what I can demonstrate. And by the way, I wanted to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I forgot that. Let's go to paragraph 17. The only basis for the Ninth District to say there was prejudice as a result of the remote cause jury instruction is, quote, when the jury considered causation, it could have confused the issue of the breach of standard of care with remote causation. But in that same paragraph, the Ninth District stated there could be another explanation for the jury answering the interrogatories on negligence and proximate cause. We have that other explanation in the record that went ignored or not appreciated by the Ninth District. I turn this court to page 449 to 450 of the transcript, and I will quote the court or tell you what happened. The jury first came back with general verdict forms. They came back without answering the jury interrogatory forms. When the trial court recognized that the interrogatories were not answered, the trial court stated, quote, okay, this may be my fault. You will have to sign the interrogatories that you answered. All of you who agree must sign the interrogatories. Do it for number one, number two, three, four, okay, go ahead and go back, end quote. There was no confusion. Page 449, the trial court told the judge or the jury, answer all four. It's right there in the record. There was no confusion. The jury did not confuse remote causation with the breach of standard of care because of this jury charge. They went back and answered all four interrogatories. Number one and number two are on negligence. Number three and number four are on proximate cause. And with that instruction, do it for the first, the second, three, and four. The jury went back and answered all four. Then at page 451 to 452 of the transcript, when they came back with those answers, the trial court told the parties that they can inspect those jury interrogatories and they could raise objections if they wanted.
So you're the appellant here, so I assume that you believe that the Court of Appeals got it wrong.
I believe that.
And you understand I'll be asking the question again in about 5 minutes about it. So you're saying there is no evidence of confusion? None.
Exactly. Paragraph 17 is without merit. Paragraph 17 is the only portion of that appellate decision that finds prejudicial error. And in that point where the Ninth District said the jury could have been confused, and then also said there could be another explanation, that explanation is right there at page 449 to 450 when the trial court said, answer all four jury interrogatories. The jury followed the instructions of that trial court. It was not confused. And with regard to why we are here for the proposition of law that when there is no negligence, an assigned error regarding to remote causation, which is proximate cause, is immaterial to that finding of no negligence. Therefore, it is harmless error with the jury's verdict. And the entire opinion of that Ninth District fails because the record eliminates confusion, provides an explanation for why all four of those, the two on negligence, two on proximate cause, were answered.
Well, let me try you one more question, if I may, then. Was there any evidence in this trial of a remote cause of this injury?
We argued for that jury charge.
That's not my question.
And we argued the basis for that was that under the circumstances that we were presented with, that it was unforeseeable that such an injury would occur under the best of hands.
Counsel, please, your time is limited. My direct question is there any evidence of a remote cause of this injury?
Yes.
What?
Our experts saying that it was reasonable for our physician not to foresee this injury was going to happen or anticipate it when he performed that surgery. Dr. Collada did everything that he could do, but he could not anticipate that this particular injury was going to happen. Can it happen? It can happen. It's a known risk.
It strikes me that your theory and your argument and what you advance to Justice O'Neill is premised on your assumption that your doctor is absolutely correct in his belief that he placed the ring as required, that he had a fingers degree, the size of his finger. As I read it, you're supposed to insert your finger to make sure you're at least that far away from the muscle. The doctor believes he did that, and that is your premise under which you say, well, it has to be something remote and unexpected. But if, in fact, he was wrong and he didn't succeed in placing the ring as he believed he did, then there's nothing remote about it because the testimony was, if you don't place it right, this is the injury that could be expected to flow from it.
Correct. And all these...
So it was, isn't that the premise of you saying it has to be something remote? Is you need the jury to first accept the idea that he properly placed the ring?
Correct. Or he did not deviate from the standard of care. That issue is not before this court. The issue of the standard of care has already been disposed of by the jury in denying the JNOV and the motion for new trial by the trial court. The appellate court even said JNOV was not.
So the jury believed your doctor's testimony that he inserted the ring correctly.
Here's what the jury believed. Dr. Collada, his testimony that he did everything appropriately. Our expert's testimony that it's a known risk to have a nerve injury and that you cannot eliminate a nerve injury 100%.
Even without pointing directly to the causation of that nerve injury, it's left as an unknown.
Or a known complication that if it did result, it wasn't a result of negligence. And I think also they rejected Dr. Irvin, their expert's testimony, because he took that extreme position that you can eliminate this 100% when his own literature says you can only minimize injuries.
Okay, so that's the crux of the distinction between the expert witnesses and your client's testimony, and the jury heard all that and obviously believed your witnesses and not theirs.
Totally believed our witnesses, rejected theirs, found no negligence, but the only issue before this court was that remote could cause jury instruction. Was it prejudicial? And the only basis in paragraph 17 was the jury could have been confused. And as I established here, page 449, they were not confused. They were explicitly told by the trial court judge to answer all four.
So we could find, as the Ninth District did, that the instruction was inappropriate, but based on everything else that's in the record, it didn't matter.
Exactly. And in fact, that was one of our propositions of law, that you rejected the appropriateness of that jury instruction is not before this court. You rejected that proposition of law. The only one has to deal with this prejudicial effect, dealing with finding of negligence, harmless error, but most importantly, the underlying basis of this confusion is eliminated when you look at page 449, where the trial court told them answer all four.
Mr. Leek, I want to clarify something. You keep saying finding of negligence, or no finding of negligence. You're really talking about the breach of duty, the breach of the duty of care. You have two other elements in negligence, and that's proximate cause and damages. So I just want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing here.
Exactly. Interrogatory number one and two dealt with the breach of standard of care. We've been referring to it to negligence to simplify it, that the jury found no negligence, i.e. no breach of the standard of care. Went on to proximate cause and found no proximate cause because the trial court judge said answer all four. They were not confused.
Thank you.
They didn't find the first two established, so they didn't get to the third and fourth elements.
But they did answer those.
Right.
According to the instructions.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. And we ask that you reverse the Ninth District and reinstate the jury verdict.
Mr. Houlihan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm Tom Houlihan. I'm back on behalf of the appellee Teresa Hayward in this matter. And in this case, the Ninth District appropriately reversed the jury verdict because an unsupported, completely unsupported jury instruction was given. And there was an indication in the Ninth District's review of the record that the jury was confused. Now, one of the things that Mr. Leek did not address in his comments was, by what standard should the Ninth District have acted? The Ninth District cited to the Pesek case, which was good support for its position, but perhaps not the most recent Supreme Court authority on what a reviewing court should do when faced with a claim of unsupported instruction and prejudice. The Hample case decided 6 months after Pesek, set forth a presumption that arises when an unsupported jury instruction is given. And in that instance, the reviewing court should not be looking for evidence of prejudice, but rather evidence that there is no prejudice, because a presumption has arisen that prejudice exists by reason of the unsupported instruction. So despite having cited Hample in their briefs, they've kind of not addressed that in this court, because I think it provides additional support, even though it was not cited by the Ninth District, for the Ninth District's approach here. In other words, the Ninth District didn't have to find affirmative evidence of prejudice. It could simply find no affirmative evidence of harmless error. But moving on to the issue of what the Ninth District found when it looked at the record, we've heard a part of the story. We've heard a part of the story, which was that the Ninth District looked at these conflicting interrogatories, and that was important in its analysis. And I believe it's important as well. We heard for the first time during oral argument, not in the briefs, not in the Ninth District, that there was a reason why these conflicting interrogatories were.
Do you disagree that the judge gave those instructions to the jury?
No, it was in the record, but
the judge specifically said, "Go back there and answer 1 through 4."
Correct.
And so they did.
They did. But
okay,
for that
and
being
that was after they reached their verdict.
Correct.
So how does that become the basis for confusion of the jury?
Well, when that argument was not raised in the Ninth District, one can't fault the Ninth District for not having acted upon that argument.
What argument?
the argument that the jury was not confused because the trial court directed them to go back and fill out these interrogatories after the verdict.
That's contained in the record. Presumably, the Ninth District is reading the record, the transcript.
That's correct. But the argument that they've raised has never been previously raised before this oral argument. So it is forfeited. In any event,
the conclusion of the Court of Appeals was that there was some error.
That's correct. And they advanced.
They inferred reversible error. And I think if I understood Mr. Leake's argument, it was there isn't any confusion on the part of the jury because the court told them to go and do it, and they answered the interrogatories consistent with that. And he cites page 449 or 450, whatever
right.
it was in the transcript, as his support.
But that's only part of the issue here.
Okay, what's
that
the rest,
may be the
what's
issue,
the rest of the issue?
The rest of the issue is that the Ninth District went on in paragraph 17 and said the jury could have confused the issue of the breach of standard of care with remote causation. And why did the court say that? Well, they weren't explicit in why they made that holding, but that is consistent with the authority in the Pesek case, which had...
Well, yeah, they could have been, had they answered the interrogatories first and then had the verdict. But because they had the verdict first and then were instructed to go back and answer 1 through 4 pursuant to the judge, you can't say that their decision about the breach and the cause was influenced by the interrogatories.
Well, the best we can say is we don't know. They had the interrogatories.
They entered a verdict for the defense, correct?
Correct.
And then they were told to go back and answer to the interrogatories. They weren't instructed, this may change your verdict if you have the opportunity to re-examine your verdict or any of that kind of stuff, were they?
That I don't specifically recall. What I can tell you is that the interrogatory forms were given to the jury at the time they had the verdict forms, and all were before the jury and considered.
So, I mean, what I'm hearing is just amplification of the paragraph 17. What could have happened? What might have happened? We don't know what happened. It's no more conclusive than the contents of paragraph 17 here.
But there are two parts to paragraph 17. The first part points to the jury interrogatories. The second part discusses how the jury could have confused the breach of standard of
care.
The
jury considered causation and could have confused the issue of the breach of the standard of care with remote causation.
Correct.
No support for that. There could have been another explanation for this confusion, it nonetheless evidences that the jury was confused.
Correct. Now, if you look at the history of what this court has said about harmless error and how this court has found harmless or prejudicial error in prior cases, if you look at the Pesek case, the court found an unsupported different methods instruction to be prejudicial. At page 499 of the Pesek opinion, the court did not identify detailed reasons it found prejudice, just that the instruction probably misled the jury. More recently in the
more... But you don't get to the causation because the interrogatories that came back answered said no breach.
But in the...
We have a duty, and then, as Justice Lansinger points out, we go to whether or not there was a breach of that duty.
But under the...
And they answered two interrogatories that the court told them to answer, and they said that there was no breach.
But under the facts of this case, and this may not be true of all medical malpractice cases, the issues of causation and standard of care were completely inseparable. Because as has been noted, a surgeon who, the testimony in this case was that a surgeon who causes a retractor injury by placing the retractor too deep during this procedure falls below the standard of care, ipso facto, okay? Both standard of care witnesses and the treating surgeon all agreed to this. As a result, if the surgeon caused this injury by placing the retractor too deep, then he must have breached the standard of care.
Counsel, let me ask you the legal question here is, I think we're all pretty much in agreement that there was no direct evidence of a remote cause of this injury. And when the court said a person's not responsible for damages to another if it's a remote cause, that is a correct statement of the law as found in OJI. And it seems to me, once again, this morning, we have a court of appeals taking a valid, allegedly valid jury verdict and reversing it. And I guess this is your time to tell us, what evidence is there that this jury was confused?
Well,
what evidence? Because that's what troubles me the most is The Ninth District Court of Appeals found, as a matter of law, that that jury was confused. What evidence?
As I was indicating, the issue of standard of care and causation were inseparable in this case.
I'm giving you that.
Okay.
That's a given.
If that's a given, then the result is clear, because the remote cause instruction gave the jury a path to find no breach of standard of care in this case. Because otherwise, if there were no alternate or remote causes introduced, this concept introduced to the jury, then there was no way to find no breach of the standard of care. Those two concepts require the Court of Appeals
and then ultimately this court, therefore, to weigh evidence. Isn't that what you're inviting us to do?
No, I'm not inviting the court to weigh evidence. I'm inviting the court to affirm the Ninth District, who reviewed the record and found that there was an indication that the jury was misled. Now, what's the proper standard for the Ninth District to have reviewed the case? They cited Pesek, but if you presume regularity in the underlying proceedings and you look at the Hample case says that if there's an unsupported instruction given to the jury, then a presumption of prejudice arises. And that can be rebutted if the court looks to the record and finds that there is no evidence of prejudice. The court has to look at the record. In this case, the court did look at the record, and they didn't find no evidence of prejudice. In fact, they found what they thought was an indication that there was prejudice.
To justify the remote cause instruction, one has to know definitively that this doctor performed the insertion of the ring to keep the abdomen open properly. In other words, he did it right. He stayed an inch away from the muscle.
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry, Your Honor. To support a remote cause instruction, one needs evidence of a truly unusual circumstance that interrupted the chain of causation. There wasn't any evidence of that sort. In fact, the surgeon who did the surgery testified he knew this type of injury could occur if he placed the retractor blades in the wrong position. This type of injury has been documented in medical literature since 1896. So for that to be suggested that the placement of the retractor blades was a remote cause, it doesn't make any sense. And that's why we objected, and that's why we pressed the objection. And because that was a path that the jury could find no breach of the standard of care based upon this remote causation issue, that's why we're here today.
And then your point is, if you weren't allowed to offer the instruction, the prejudice is presumed at that point.
If there's under Hample, which is from July or June of 2000, this court said that if an unsupported jury instruction is given, prejudice is generally presumed. And then you can't reverse based simply on this presumption of prejudice. The reviewing court has to go and look at the record. Well, even though the Ninth District didn't cite to Hample, it followed those steps. It identified the problematic instruction. It went and looked at the record. The record indicated that there was a problem with the interrogatories, which at oral argument for the first time an explanation has popped up. And also, there's the problem with the remote cause, causation, and standard of care all being inseparably linked together, which has been our argument since day one in this case. You can't separate it in this case.
Counsel, did your expert testify that if the device was placed correctly, you would never have nerve damage?
No. What our expert, Dr. Irvin, testified to was that if the device was properly placed, you would never have nerve damage as a result of the retractor compressing the nerve.
Okay, and his literature agreed with that statement?
No. His literature said that you could minimize the instance of any injury to the nerve by carefully placing the retractors.
All right, so that's a difference, isn't it?
There's a difference, and that's...
All right, so he's got his literature that everybody's relying on that doesn't get the opportunity to cross-examine him or speak to him in person, and then he comes into the trial court and is much more definitive.
No. Your Honor, you identified the difference. In his literature, he said you can minimize all instances of femoral nerve injury by using this procedure, okay? And then when he testified, he said, with respect to femoral nerve injury caused by retractors, you can eliminate that, make it zero. You can minimize all injury to the nerve, whether retractor-based or not. That's what the literature said. You can eliminate it due to retractor-based injury if you use this procedure. So the two, there was a difference there in what the literature said and what the expert came in and testified to. The issue in this case was, you know, was there a retractor injury, and what was the cause of
and
that
and
injury?
The jury believed that, had to believe that the defendant properly placed the retractor.
I don't know what the jury believed or did not believe. It appeared to me that the jury was confused based upon everything we've discussed here. They returned a general negligence verdict against our claim, but we have this problem with the jury instructions with which we believe from start to finish, based upon the interrelated nature of causation and standard of care in this case, caused that bad
so
result.
So you think the remote causation instruction permeated the entire consideration by the jury of the elements of this tort?
It provided an alternate path for the jury to find no breach of the standard of care, because the testimony was consistent that a surgeon who causes this injury by placing the retractor too deep is in breach of the standard of care. If there was another path to suggest that this retractor was placed somewhere different, a remote cause occurred, you know, a meteor fell in the hospital, that gave them a path to find no breach of the standard of care. So we would ask that this court affirm the Ninth District and further set forth a restatement of the Hampel rule, which is that if an unsupported jury instruction is given, prejudice is generally presumed, but then the reviewing court must look at the record to see if the presumption of prejudice is rebutted. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Lake, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
The issues before this case do not involve the substance of the evidence, the appropriateness of the remote jury instruction. It deals with the determination in paragraph 17 that there was prejudicial error. We've cited all the case law that deals with no negligence, immaterial proximate cause, but the important part about this case is paragraph 17, when they speculated that there could have been confusion, and then the next sentence said, while there could be another explanation.
Counsel,
why
but
the
isn't,
jury...
isn't your opposing counsel correct that if there's no evidence of remote cause, it was an inappropriate instruction? If you take that if, doesn't the burden then go to the Court of Appeals to find evidence that there was no prejudice?
On that issue, that is a res ipsa loquitur case. They never argued res ipsa loquitur. We responded by saying that our doctor met the standard of care, went through the procedures of why this was properly placed. The jury accepted that testimony, and the fact that the nerve injury resulted was a known complication. This is not a res ipsa case. But most importantly, they said we waived any argument about confusion. No, we haven't. We have always argued that this jury got it right, that it was not confused. And the only reason it answered all four is on page 449 through 450, where it said answer 1, 2 on breach of the standard of care, 3, 4 on proximate cause. They followed the jury's instructions. They did not object. They did not challenge those findings. There was no prejudice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?